Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. It was said back in the day that Pop Warner's Carlisle Indians teams would take on any challenges that came before them. Well, they had one in one season that really was put them to the test. And it's from an unlikely source that Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com explains. Tim's up in a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history, and welcome to another Tuesday where we get to find an exciting tale that comes out of the tidbits of Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Darren. Look forward to talking and a little bit of a fishy story here.
A little bit of a fishy story. Well, this is a fascinating one. And it's got a title that really can take a fan of football history to many different places. Your recent tidbit is titled The Unlikely 1910 Carlisle Harvard Law School Game. What can you tell us about this one, Tim?
Yeah, so this one's kind of fun, just a couple different levels. So there was a time, mostly like turn of the century, where, and up to like 1910, but where like a lot of professional, independent medical schools, dental schools, law schools, and sometimes even law schools affiliated with, major universities. I know USC had a law school team, but they would have, it'd be the Chicago School of Dentistry, and boom, they'd have a. I just did a story on Chicago Veterinary College and their team. So there's, there were a bunch of them who played. But when I came across this story, I'd never heard of Harvard having a law school team. So I was like, what the heck is going on there? Because they, again, it's just, I hadn't heard about it. So, check into it. And so what ended up happening was that there was a guy named Hamilton Fish, which is where the fishy thing came from. And so he ended up being like the treasurer of the United States. He was like a big deal. But he was... I think he had been a captain of Harvard's undergrad football team. Either way, he was a prominent player. I think it was, first team All-American. So he ends up at Harvard Law School, and this is 1910. And he's kind of looking around, and he's like, we got a lot of really good football players, who currently attend Harvard Law, and their careers, their college playing careers are over. But he's, kind of says, hey, let's get the boys back together. I mean, there were like three or four guys who had started at Harvard. There were a couple of guys who had started at Yale. There's guys from a couple of other, different schools. And so he gets the team together and they start practicing, playing a little bit. And then they scrimmage Harvard's varsity and did pretty well. I think they lost like 6-3, you know, they kind of kept score, but they played them, you know, pretty darn well. So he said, okay, let's do this again. So he challenges Yale to a game, and they say no, you know, they can't fit it in their schedule, whatever. So then he's trying to find, he's thinking about, okay, who could I challenge, you know, who will take me up on it? And so he challenges Pop Warner and the Carlisle team, because, you know, combination of Carlisle, just they would play anybody anytime. That's, you know, they just went and did, they didn't care. They'd take anybody up. And then, you know, Pop always liked to, you know, get as much money as he could, both probably for the school, and then he probably got some kind of cut. So anyways, he agrees to add a game. So basically in the middle of November, you know, this is like college football. You can't do this anymore. But so middle of November, he just inserts like a Wednesday afternoon game. and so that gave him 5 games in 22 days, you know, because then they played somebody else, you know, the following Saturday. So, you know, it's just one of those things you just can't imagine anymore. But so then Harvard Law and Carlisle play. Now, Carlisle didn't have Pete Hauser, who was their star quarterback. He didn't play in the game. And I don't know if they just held him out, if he was hurt or whatever. But it ends up that a guy named, you know, Stephen Philbin, who had starred at Yale, he's the big running back for the law school team. And he ends up kicking. He drop kicks a field goal at one point for the only point scored in the game. So Harvard Law beats Carlisle 3-0. And so then they're still not satisfied, you know. And so Fish arranges one of these barnstorming tours, you know, before there were really barnstorming tours. So he sets up, you know, 3 games, you know, one in like Nashville, Memphis, and then Baton Rouge over Christmas. And so he ends up with, like, some of the guys, some of the Harvard Law School guys didn't want to do, you know, they didn't want to be part of it. So it's like part some of those guys, and they picked up some guys from Vanderbilt, and they picked up a couple guys from Michigan, like, I think Germany Schultz and some other guys from that era are playing. So it's basically this mix of guys, but they still called them the Harvard Law School team. And, you know, it didn't really turn out as well as they had hoped in terms of the size of the crowds. And so they ended up being like, they won one of the games and they tied the other two, scoreless ties. So they weren't real exciting games. And they didn't get as much money from everything as they expected. So some of the guys had to like wire their parents to send them money so that they could get home, because they just ran out of funds. So anyway, it's just one of those funny things about, you know, number one, just the thought of being able to just say, hey, here's a bunch of guys in law school with me. We're going to play a top 25 college team and then do it, you know. And then the fact that this top 25 college team is willing to play them, you know. So it's just kind of, you know, obviously football has gotten much, much more complex and detailed than it was, you know, at that time, but it's still kind of a funny thing that they pulled it together and did well, you know.
Right. So yeah. I mean, it's kind of and if I'm not mistaken, you know, Carlisle, because you know, Thorpe had to be at Carlisle then, I would assume, but he probably wasn't old enough to be playing varsity ball, because he played 1912 Olympics.
He played before the 1910 season, and he played after the 1910 season, but he didn't play in 1910.
Okay. Yeah. And Carlisle, you sit there and you think about, you know, some of these guys are, they're that school's like starting like sixth grade or something, I think. And they're on the football team, but probably not playing these varsity games. But then you have a grad school team of guys that are probably in their mid 20s playing that are well educated at Harvard. It's kind of a, you know, polar opposites here of teams and just, you know, of what they can pull from. But, yeah. You know, I'm sure they were all in their 20s or late teens on Carlisle that are the starters playing it.
Yeah, I mean, Carlisle, who knows how old some of those guys were.
Yeah, right.
They also had guys like, either they played at Haskell and then they went to Carlisle or the other way around. But some guys got more than 4 years of playing time in.
Yeah, just some interesting times and interesting matchup that you would never think would work, but must have been a good game, only a one score game. So that's pretty
Yeah.
cool.
Well, I guess you had to love, punting and lack of scoring back then to watch football. So,
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, that is another great example of a story that you find and you dig up, and do the archaeology on. That's the name of your site. And you bring it to us Gridiron history fans and present it the way you do in your tidbits. Now, maybe you could tell the listeners how they can enjoy your tidbits and be a part of them.
Yeah, well, I can't tell you how to enjoy them. I can tell you how to get to them. You may not enjoy them once you get there. But so, yeah, it's I write them up on footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. So you just go there, subscribe by submitting your email, and then you'll every time I write a new story, you'll get an email with the story. Alternatively, if you don't want them clogging up your email box, then just you can follow me on Substack. You can, subscribe and then, but just not get the emails and then read them on the site itself. Or you can follow me on Blue Sky because I post everything out there as well. So.
All right. Well, Tim, those are many great ways to enjoy your writing and enjoy these great football pieces of history that you've collected. And we would really like to talk to you again next Tuesday about some more history. And we thank you for joining us tonight.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.